Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The University of Tulsa School of Art and the Alexander Hogue Gallery present a new exhibit by Fort Worth-based artist Cedric Huckabee. Huckabee is serving a residency at the school as the Ruth Mayo Visiting Artist, and some of his signature works are the subject of the Hogue Gallery exhibit, Woven Together. The show features two of his large portraits of family members who represent the artist's personal history, recurring theme in his work, as well as one section of his mural-sized work, A Love Supreme. This mural consists of four works, each one based on the seasons, that measure in total 80 feet. Fall is on display in Tulsa. This one section is 20 feet long, depicting highly detailed family quilts, another subject Huckabee has painted over the years. Another of his most prominent works, The 99%, feature 101 lithographs of residents in his neighborhood of Highland Hills. Candid portraits of people relaxing in their homes, sitting on their front porch, with quotes from each as they conversed during the sketching session. Huckabee's works are in the collections of the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, the Amon Carter Museum in Fort Worth, Boston's Museum of Fine Arts, and the Whitney Museum of American Art in New York, just to name a few. He's an associate professor of art at the University of Texas at Arlington. The exhibit opens tomorrow with an artist talk at 5 o'clock at TU's Phillips Hall, followed by an opening reception in the gallery, and both are free and open to the public. Cedric Huckabee is my guest today. Cedric Huckabee, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us, and welcome to Tulsa.
Well, thank you for having me.
This exhibit, Woven Together at the Alexander Hogue Gallery, really features some of your most important work in your life over the last few years, with examples of some very, very large-scale paintings as well as lithographs that reflect some of your interest. Tell me a little bit about these works and what you were trying to do in putting this particular exhibition together. Is it just sort of an overview of your work?
It's a discussion about family and heritage over the years. I think the large quilt is probably the earliest work in the exhibition. And that large quilt is one of four. And the four pieces make up one actual, like, work. And
that must be stunning, because I should mention A Love Supreme Fall. There are four seasonal Love Supremes. And this is like 20 feet in length, mm-hmm. Probably 7 to 8 feet tall. And seeing them together must be a stunning sight, because when you say it's a quilt, it looks to me as a viewer as a series of quilts.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a series of quilts put together, most of which are my grandmother's quilts. But in the spring quilt, that's not in the gallery, it's the fall. But in the spring quilt, it's a lot of my wife's great-grandmother's quilts are in that one.
So there are definite connections in all of the quilts that you paint.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. There have been some quilts where I've used, you know, like other people's quilts, but most of the quilts I painted has come from my own family, my wife's family.
Well, these massive pieces, what was the inspiration for doing them? I think they were done over a period of 6 or 7 years, I think. What was the impetus for doing these particular four large works?
I guess it came from a lot of inspirations coming together. One inspiration was I just come from Europe studying old master paintings and seeing works like the Sistine Chapel or some of the great works by Monet, you know, those large water lilies. And I was trying to do a great work myself, and at that point inspired and willing to put the time into it to get the thing made and created. I didn't know it would end up taking about 8 years to do, but it did. But I was inspired enough by my grandmother's quilts and thinking about them as like a collaboration with her.
Now, 8 years is a long time. I assume you're working on other projects, but what drew this out so long?
It wasn't necessarily the process. I think the works could have been done quicker than 8 years, but it was trying to fit a really large project in life, you know. So there was other works that I was working on during that time that were faster. We're talking about like an 80-foot long painting.
Yeah.
So if I were just to work on that all the way through, I couldn't I basically couldn't afford to do that. I had to work on other stuff, and that's what ends up taking so long. Mm-hmm.
Did it also give you time to think about the choices you were making, or?
It did. To think about them, to work them out. You know, in the end, I came up with I was able to complete the piece, but I think I also had a number of other ideas in the process. So in the show, you'll see these some prints. They were like lithographs that were sort of painted on top of, and those were pieces that were done as a way of thinking about abstracting the quilts. So they're each one of those pieces are, in one way, they represent, they're based on the quilts of A Love Supreme, but then there's a process of abstracting them, you know, me working on top of them and just really playing with color, with the process of abstraction to see what the same might look like if they were abstracted.
Yeah, there are many ways. The large A Love Supreme is very much a realist piece. Mm-hmm. And those lithographs are kind of a blurred perspective, I guess, of
right.
the same. They're very striking as well. Have you ever shown all four panels together?
I have on a number of occasions.
What is that like?
So the painting was designed when I was working on it. One of the things I was thinking about is that different spaces are going to be different. And there is an ideal way to show them, but I understood that the piece should be able to fit different spaces so that it could have different expressions and then be able to show them in more ways. So I've been able to show it in 40-foot long stretches. I've been able to show it as a sort of a box that you walk into. I've shown them singularly, like in this show you see one mm-hmm. of the panels, and it's worked wonderfully in that way, in that I've been able to show different facets of them and show them in different dynamic situations or have a different type of dynamic with different situations.
I think I've seen images of all four. And isn't there a sort of a color scheme for each season?
A little bit. I think a little bit about that. Kind of, you know, in the Star Wars trilogy, they had a similar kind of thing, if you're a Star Wars fan, where they had different seasons and different color palettes that went along with some of the movies. And so, yeah, they have a little bit of a color palette thing with each of them.
But that wasn't really a main thought as you were creating it, or was it?
Well, it's a thought in the sense that when you think about the seasons, how seasons have different palettes. And so in the same sense, the different color palettes and the different, with the different panels.
Now, you've been painting quilts for a number of years and certain other projects as well. What was the attraction of painting quilts?
Initially, we had some of my grandmother's quilts. Mm-hmm. And
good subject matter?
Yeah, and we grew up with those quilts, and I used to love to, you know, there's many of them was very vibrant. And when I was a young artist, I would just use them as backdrops to still life. And somewhere in college, during my graduate studies, I sort of realized the quilts were actually enough of a subject to not have stuff in front of it. Like, it could be the subject because they carried a lot of information in them. Not only, you know, a sense of heritage, a sense of aesthetic. And there's different, you know, they talk about different things depending on what quilts you have.
It's true. Oftentimes it's about a particular place and time in the person making its life.
Yeah.
There's a great deal of symbology, I believe, in a quilt sometimes.
Definitely. And some of the aesthetics that are there are aesthetics that's been handed down from generation to generation. People were so fascinated with the G's Bean quilts when they came in.
Yeah, right.
And one of the fascinations of that was that what the quilters were doing in terms of abstraction, the kind of sophistication that was in their abstraction, they were amazed by it because they, after talking with the quilters, understood they didn't talk to any mainstream artist or they didn't go to school for art, but the intelligence in their decision making was equivalent to what they were seeing in some of the top abstract art of the day, and these pieces came before that abstract art. So That aesthetic was an aesthetic that was handed down from generation to generation, and it was joined with something you call use what you got, you know, and put those two things together, and they ended up making something very beautiful, very creative.
Yeah. Well, they certainly had the eye, which, you know, you don't have to be trained to have the eye. You know, you can see something and you see it has beauty, it has interest, it has, it, you know, it brings you into whatever it is, whether it's a painting or a quilt for that matter.
Right.
My guest today is Cedric Huckabee, the Ruth Mayo Memorial Visiting Artist at the University of Tulsa. He's an associate professor of art at the University of Texas, Arlington. His work is in major collections, and you can see his work at the Alexander Hogue Gallery in an exhibit titled Woven Together. It's on display through January 13th, and he's our guest today, and there's an opening reception and artist talk on Thursday. I want to talk about two of the other paintings, which are really gorgeous, heavy impasto, and they're portraits, which is another something you really like to do. And they're from a series called Everyday Glory. Tell me about these two pieces.
The two portraits are paintings of my paintings that come from a series of paintings of my aunts and uncles on my mother's side. Originally, I had done a series called Big Mama's House, and I was trying to paint about the black family. I was, you know, I started with my own family, and I started with Big Mama, who was sort of the center of that family. And at the point where I started, she was sort of like a single mother at that point. But her house was the place where everybody would meet at holidays, and people would just meet over there and felt very welcome there. And so I did this whole series about her, but I was really trying to deal with the subject of black families. So I started with her, and the idea was to branch out from there. So there was a whole series of work beginning with her, and that series ended up being a group of paintings of her in the last 2 years of her life. But that was the start, and then the next group, I started painting her children, which the two paintings in the gallery are two paintings of my aunts. And sort of the way that they start, the large-scale portraits, one of the last paintings in Big Mama's house was a large-scale portrait of her toward the end of her life. And so that's where I picked up on when I started this series of her children, which is the large-scale portraits, sort of loose, painterly, and that was the start of that group.
Your brushwork has such a great sense of energy that comes through in it, and I really love the look of those portraits. What was your Big Mama's first reaction upon saying, hey, I want to paint you? And obviously you painted her several times. Was she up for it? Was it something you had to convince her?
Not really.
Oh, yeah.
I had painted over there for many, many years. Like when I was in college, when I first started college at Texas Wesleyan. Texas Wesleyan is a few blocks from where she lives. And I would go over there, you know, I spend time over there. I grew up around her
house. So she was used to seeing you with paints.
Right.
Yeah.
And started painting her, and she was willing. And I think more than anything, she just liked having me around. So.
And the family members, the portraits something they really love?
Yeah, you know, they like the process. They end up seeing themselves painted large. It's probably slightly strange at first, but after a while, you know, I got the reputation for being that artist guy, the artist family member, and they all are used to me. They know me and what I do, and by the time I get around to somebody, they already know what the deal is.
One of the things you say is you enjoy doing portraits with a live sitter. And I think a lot of the work in this exhibit sort of reflects that, whether it's a drawing that become lithograph or these oil portraits. What's your process of having folks sit for you? Do you engage them in conversation? Do you?
Yeah, it's some of everything. Like the main thing is a live sitter, and I've done everything. I've painted from live sitters. I've painted from photographs. I've painted from like drawings, but getting the person in front of you, it's almost like you're collaborating with that person, or at least their energy. And sometimes they're talking and there's a back and forth with conversation. Sometimes that conversation can change the course of the painting. But it's something about them being there, you know, that it's just different. And I don't know how quite to explain it, but their energy is there and they're there. And even if they don't say a thing, there's something about looking at the person, a living person sitting and breathing in front of you. It's harder to do. You know, it'd be easier if you had a flat image and the image never moved. But so it makes you a little more on edge, like you're a little more attentive to the person, really. And there's just something about that process that's more engaging, more fulfilling. And at the end of the day, you and that person just share this slice of life together. And there's something just important about that at the end.
The stereotypical view of artists doing a portrait is stay still. I don't gather that's your approach. I mean, you want them in one place, but they have to move. You have to interact with them, and that sort of helps you guide the portrait, I would say.
It's a give and a take. There's some times where I want you to be still. There's other times where, like, I'm painting the collar on your shirt. Why does your mouth have to be still when I'm painting that, you know?
Uh-huh.
So you just kind of work with the person. And if people are not a professional model, then there's no way they could do that anyway. Like, and it becomes harder and harder as we go forward, because I think people are more accustomed to a lot of things going on. It used to be a number of years back, it was less busy for people. Like, you come in and they didn't come in with a phone and with a this and with a that. But now people are accustomed to a lot of stuff happening. So you got to work with people.
Always multitasking, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to ask about one portrait that is not in the show, but it's one I think you did in 2017. George W. Bush.
Okay.
Was that a live sitting, or was that from a photograph?
It was a live sitting.
Really?
Yeah.
By this time, he was already painting himself, I guess.
I'm sure he's done a number of paintings of himself.
Uh-huh.
And I spent a number of years teaching him before I ever painted the portrait.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. And so that portrait, I guess that's the one thing about it. There's the one that...
It is distinctly unpresidential. It's him in his natural state.
It is. And I've actually painted three of him.
Uh-huh.
One of them is a painting of just his hands. One of them is a painting of him in the middle of his studio, and you can see a lot of his paintings around the studio. And I think that piece travels with the group of works called Portraits of Courage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what makes that painting different from other paintings of presidents that you've seen. Many of them, the usual protocol is people will get a picture of the president. They might meet them, have a conversation with them, and then they go back to their studio and they figure out how to paint them. And they're probably pretty nervous, so they want to get a good likeness or something, you know. And so I do too, you know. But the difference is that I'm painting someone that I've come to know versus painting in the other way. It's painted live, and so it has that a little bit more of that being on the edge, the sort of sensitive nature of sitting in front of a person and trying to get the details you see. And then, you know, it's somebody who I've come to know versus somebody who you don't know.
Right, right. Well, in our last section of this conversation, I want to talk about perhaps in sheer numbers, the largest part of this exhibition. It's your series, The 99%. These are a series of lithographs. They look like they were original, very sketchy drawings that you did with residents of a neighborhood in Fort Worth. Tell me this was a reaction to the talk of the 1% and the 99%.
It was. I was wondering at that point in time, that conversation was out, and I was thinking about what's on the mind of the average person in my community, because I could hear on, you know, when I listened to the news, what was being said that people are thinking about at this time, and what's being forecasted is what's sort of in the clouds of our minds, or the minds of the average person, But I just thought, what about the average person in my community, the average person that I know? So I started on this series where I wanted to paint people from Highland Hills, or people who, because everybody in that series might not be from Highland Hills, but they were in Highland Hills on that day when I was coming through. At the time, maybe they were with a friend, or maybe they were some friends that were with a friend. And so in that sense, it's a portrait of a community. And they came from, originally I was going around doing sketches in a sketchbook. And I took all the sketches with me to a printmaking residency called Brandywine, where I relayed the sketches or redid every sketch as a lithographic print. So the prints are going to look sort of different from the sketches, because the sketches were pen and ink drawings, mm-hmm. whereas as using the lithographic processes, I was able to use brushes and able to use a sharp tool that was like a pen, but it gave me a little more of something that looks like it has washes in with a drawing tool versus just the sharp edge of pen and ink.
And in all of these portraits, of which I think we're seeing about 101 or so, mm-hmm. there's the conversations you're having. And sometimes it's profound conversation. Sometimes it's, you know.
Mundane. What,
yeah, mundane, very much mundane. Are those actual conversations that were related as you were sketching?
They were. They come from the conversations. They're bits and pieces that, for whatever reason, they stuck out to me from that conversation, so I decided to put them on the drawings. But there was much more that happened in those conversations, and there was things I couldn't put or didn't put on there. Some for various reasons. Sometimes they just didn't seem like, you know, I put the things that seemed to stick out. And it's kind of a matter of, I forgot what photographer it was who, there became a thing of the decisive moment. To take a picture. And somewhere in those conversations, there was some little thing that seemed like, this is the thing that I want to put on this drawing. It's a type of decisive moment. And those moments aren't always big things. They're not always important things in the way that we think of important. Sometimes little things could be important.
Some are referring to how they try to do a good job at work, and they're mm-hmm. always trying to help people that come into their store. Mm-hmm. Another one is reflecting on God. Mm-hmm. Another one is a kid is saying, you know, I can beat you. uh-huh. You might win, but I can still win.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So there's just fun moments. But what also comes out of it is a sense of, in many of them, is a sense of just profound fatigue in a lot of them. You know, some of them are laying down. Some of them are sitting down. You can see them slumped. It's almost like many of them, it's like after the end of a long day. Was that a sense you were getting, or is that just my reaction?
I was trying to make drawings that spoke to the profoundness of everyday life. Like, really, nothing important, but that is important. So that's why you get, like, somebody laying down on their couch, or a person sitting up, you know. Some people sat for me. You know, I got all kind of pictures. But it was a conversation about the extraordinary nature of just everyday life.
I think there's one that says, you know, I just live in the moment.
Yeah.
No, they're really beautiful and thought-provoking. And I assume that's what you wanted to get out of it at a time when we're thinking about the 1%, the 99%, 99% are all of us, pretty much.
You know, it's interesting because, to be honest, I didn't know. It didn't seem like anything profound. Like, I thought it was important to get this story. I didn't think that it would be something that would be accepted the way it has been. Like, I didn't know, for instance, why or if a wider audience would be interested in hearing from the people in Highland Hills, you know, the neighborhood that I lived in. But it happened to be very, you know, audiences have been intrigued by them, and it's taught me a number of lessons as well.
I want to briefly mention one of the more recent series. It's not in this show, but you can see it at your website, Cedric Huckabee, and it's called A Dialogue with an Unknown People, mm-hmm. and it combines these portraits from early 20th century, I'm talking maybe the first decade or two of the 20th century, mm-hmm. with more recent they're paired with these more recent photographs. Mm-hmm. Some look like 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. maybe a little later. Mm-hmm. Tell us about this series. What was the impetus for this?
There's a residency at the Amon Carter.
Mm-hmm. That's Museum in Fort Worth.
Uh-huh. Yes, the Amon Carter Museum in Fort Worth. And it's usually done by either an art historian or somebody who is working probably mostly in art history. But it's called a Davison Family Fellowship. And with that residency, you get to go into the museums, you get access to the archives of the museum. They'll give you an office in the back where you get to work there. And while I was there, I discovered this group of photos that they had, and I'm trying to remember the name of this group. It was called the Mary Everhart Collection of Photos, and it was just this photographer or this photo studio that existed probably around, you're right, like early 1900s. They had all of these photographs of African-American families, of people from the community that really they hadn't showed very much, or when they did, they definitely hadn't showed the whole like spectrum of them. And they were so interesting to me to see the different people at that time, how they wanted to be represented, what they looked like in the photographs, their different places in the community, different people. It was just an interesting group of photos. And so I wanted to respond to that group of photos with drawings of people that I knew. And just as a way of creating this dialogue, a sort of visual dialogue over the generations.
Yeah, they're very striking as well. Well, we hope a lot of people will come out Thursday and see your work and at the Alexander Hogue Gallery. It is quite striking, and it's been a pleasure to talk with you. Cedric, thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Artist Cedric Huckabee speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. He's serving a residency as the Ruth Mayo Distinguished Visiting Artist at the University of Tulsa. He's an associate professor of art at the University of Texas in Arlington and a highly distinguished painter. Some of his most prominent works opens tomorrow at the Alexander Hogue Gallery in an exhibit titled Woven Together. It opens with an artist talk at 5 o'clock at the Jerry Jones Lecture Hall in Phillips Hall on the TU campus, followed by an opening reception in the Alexander Hogue Gallery at 6 o'clock. Both events are free and open to the public. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.